Right. So last week we started the question of contiguity, and we noted that the question of whether the Ritzufin question in the Gemara, the Mefuzaret question in the Gemara, rather, Rashbam assumed that it was, the question was, does 135 work? Maskana was 135 does not work. The Itur says, no, 135 does work. The Maskana was, the Havamina, does one fallow two, or three, fallow, right, one year two fallow, year three plant, does that work total? Maskana is no, but 3 years does work, even if they're non-consecutive. Right, and we talked about what that might be based on in terms of the nature of shtar and muchakos and all, filling in all those things again. To finish it off today, the Gemara, once it deals with that, then deals with what? Right, with what? Very interesting variation on this. What? Yes. Days and nights in the house. So he says, Tznan, Chezkat Abatim. We don't just talk about chazakas on fields, we talk about chazakas on houses. So the Gemara says, how can you ever have a chazaka on a house? V'habatim dibiyamama yodei, bilelya lo yodei. You could never know for sure whether someone lived in a house at night. Why not? Yes, exactly, right? Because that would be creepy if you had, that very simply, it would be very creepy if you had witnesses who could say with certitude that you were in your house at day and night, because you know, that's called spying, right? That's called being creepy. So it just doesn't really happen. So the Sigmara says how... Right, so how can you really have this consecutive, this consecutivity if you don't have nights? Now, what exactly do you think the Hava Mina was at this stage? So let me put it a little bit sharper. One is, remember, we already talked about this with Rashbam. What does this mean? Does the Gemara have a Havamina, therefore, that, look, the nights can never count, and therefore you need 6 years? Right? Because you need 3 years total, and what you would be getting is 3 years non-consecutive. Right? Meaning, you don't know about nights, and therefore what? And therefore, does that mean there's no chazak at all? Maskana is nights count towards 3 years? Does the Hava Mina need 6 years? Right? What exactly is going on? Right? The Gemara is not clear exactly what it wants. Yes, Ezra. Yeah. Right. Okay, good. Good, good, good. So Ezra's asking exactly the right questions, which is, you've got to figure out what exactly the Gemara wants from our lives when it says this. Now, you're right. Meaning, let's think about what it could mean. If you imagine that chazaka is about muchzakut, is about creating ownership in it, right? So then you might think, then how would you understand the question in the Gemara? Which is, if you need contiguous,
right? Mufsakut. So maybe the fact that nights you can't prove that you're there, or maybe you're not doing anything at night, that can't create that status. If you think that it's about proof that's created by provocation, then you got to figure out what the Gemara wants. Meaning, of course I leave my house. Does the fact that I leave my house, does that mean that I'm not provoking you and it doesn't create proof? Right? Or is the Gemara saying, look, maybe at the end of the day, yeah. Like, if look, because you're working during the day, I'm working during the day. But at night, I can't know that you're there. No one really knows that you're there. So maybe it doesn't provoke anything. Meaning, we got to figure out exactly what the Gemara wants. And you also got to figure out, is the Gemara asking about the chazaka itself? Or is it asking about, at this stage, more evidence? Right? Meaning, the Gemara is mixing two things. Right? Which is the question, the Gemara, about the creation of the chazaka or the proof that's necessary to create chazaka? Yeah. Right. So you're right. So the Gemara here doesn't raise the question of what about, right? Could something besides for your actual presence count as being there, like leaving your stuff there? The Gemara in Irvin does, right? Not about Chazaka. The Gemara in Irvin about talking about other things does. But you're right. The Gemara seems here to assume that that wouldn't be the case. So, right, you're right. In the field case, it does seem to be like, no, clearly you're not there every moment of every day. Clearly, the fact that your produce is there and growing and you're harvesting is considered contiguous, right? So maybe you should come up with some equivalent by a house. Yeah. We don't know that it was contiguous, right? Non-broken up, correct. Right, so all these things have to be thought of as you go in the Gemara. The Gemara says, so how do you deal with this? So Amar Abaye, man masra batim, shivive, and shivive made the yod, I be a mamma velel yod. So Abaye tries to solve this. And he says it's the neighbors, right? The neighbors will, in fact, know that you're there day and night. So Abaye, what does he seem to say? Simple shot. What is, right? What conceptual move does he seem to make? Right? He... meaning he... right, so... But let's put it differently. Meaning, Abaye by the end seems to think that the chazaka actually has to be day and night, right? Meaning, the Gemara in its question seems to think that it can't be. You could create a chazaka in day and night because no one would know, right? Abaye by solving the technical problem makes a conceptual claim, which is the neighbors will know, and therefore you could create a chazak of day and night, and therefore a chazak on a house requires day and night, 3 years. Right? I mean, that's what he assumes. You actually need day and night every day, and it is possible to prove it by having neighbors. Now, why would you think that you actually need day and night constantly? I mean, that's Abaye's maskana, right? Is that you actually need 3 years of day and night, day and night, day and night, in and out, right? In and out every day. Right, I guess people never traveled, or they were in lockdown for 3 years, right? But, right, why do you think he thinks that? So again, at this stage, I think you could go in any direction, right? You could say either he thinks you need to create Muchzakot, and once you break it up, you break it up. It destroys that claim. Or it doesn't create provocation, because maybe I'm a night owl, And Andrew only goes out at night to check whether Rami's in his now in his house, right? And he only walks during the night. He's allergic to the sun. I don't know. I had a friend who was allergic to the sun. What? So only goes out at night. So if he goes out at night, he doesn't see Rami there. He's not going to say anything. So whatever model you want to take. So, but Abaye seems to claim that, yeah, you in fact need days and nights. Rava says, Kagon, the Atu Beit Trei, the Amri, Anon, Agrinon, Mine, Vidarinon Beit, Klatshnin, Biyamam, Ovelelia. Rava has another solution, which is that you rented it to people, and the people you rented it to are the ones testifying. Right, so this is a sort of a funny case where Rami is claiming that he owns the house that used to belong to Andrew. And what's his proof? That he rented it out to Migdal HaTorah as our dorm apartment. And Ezra and Eli decided to stay Shana Gimel without ever going home for summers. And therefore they stayed in their dorms day and night. And bummed out and weren't in the Beis Medrash. So they were just in their apartment for 3 years, day and night. I don't know. I have to come up with some case here, right? And therefore, at the end of the 3 years, Eli and Andrew can testify that Andrew never challenged it because Rami was expressing his ownership through them for 3 years, right? That's the case, right? It's a bit convoluted, but okay. But now the Gemara, for a moment, breaks out of the Chazaka discussion and says, what, Gavi? Yes, right. They say that's a problem. Why? Because Amar Le Rav Yehima Le Ravashi Hana Nogin Be Edutane Di Ilo Amri Achi Amrin Lo Zilu Havulo Agar Beita Lahai. The problem is at this point, Eli and Ezra will say, look, aren't they biased? Because if they don't testify that it belongs to Rami. And Rami gave them a good deal. Either he let them be there for free out of the goodness of his heart, or he gave them a good deal, but they don't realize that, if they don't do that, so then let's say Rami rented to them for 2,000 shekel a month, right? But really, an apartment that size in Modian goes for 8,000 shekel a month. Yes, that's exactly what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, of course they're going to testify that it belongs to Rami, because otherwise they're going to have to pay the 6,000 shekel balance per month, well, really the 8,000, right? Or even if they assume Rami's going to give the money, so the 6,000 shekel balance for every month of the 2.5 years or whatever to Andrew. Well, come up with whatever case you want. Meaning you're going to owe rent. You're going to owe rent to Andrew. Whether that means you're going to have to pay the whole thing, right? And Rami might have to pay you back part of it, right? Or whatever, or pay part of it to Andrew, or price it for Andrew. Come on, I'm just coming up with a case. Could be any case. The point is that you have a vested interest in not having to pay the rent now for 3 years to Andrew. No, it's not the judge. So then the Gemara answers. No. The Gemara says...
Say that the case we're actually talking about is one word. Because I thought...
This is the question. I'm not the answer yet. This is the question. The Gemara says that you and Eli are the ones who are testifying that the field belongs... That the house belongs to Rami because he rented it to you for the last 3 years and you were there the whole time.
Yeah.
The Gemara says, but you can't testify because if you're not... Right? You... We're definitely there. Everyone knows that you live there. And if it turns out that it isn't Rami's, then you don't have permission to live there. Now you have to pay rent to Andrew. So therefore, you're biased.
Well, what's the case that the reason why I'm biased? Because I have already seen Rami for those 3 years. And the fact that it turns out it belongs to Andrew, even if the price was the same, I still haven't paid Andrew anything.
Correct. I'm coming up with different cases, meaning yes.
In which I hadn't paid Rami yet, but that
Yeah, we're going to get there. But at this point, I'm just coming up with a case. But you're right, right? Fine. I go back on the price differential case, right? It was just an example, but fine. So then the Gemara says, no. Amr lei, dine de shvile hachi, dina milo askinen, konochide garvejev amr leman lezve. So, right, what's the case? Yeah, he says, are we dealing with, right, judges who are not bikin? So no, the case is that they haven't paid yet, so they don't care who they pay it to. Yeah, that's the answer, right? Meaning the question didn't assume that, but the answer is that they are, right, they're just ready to pay the rent to whoever. They don't care who owns it. So they're just testifying the fact that Rami had been the one who gave them the contract, and therefore their presence should be counted towards Rami's presumed ownership, but they actually are not biased because they don't care. If it turns out that it belongs to Andrew, they'll pay Andrew. It doesn't matter. They have 3 years of rent to pay, and whoever they pay, they pay. So Amar Mar Zutra. V'itain v'amar leitu treise hade v'atahu dede didarbe shlit shnei v'yamoma v'lelya ta'ande taina. So now Mar Zutra says something which is fascinating. Right, what does he say? He qualifies this, and he says, listen, you, who, it was Andrew, whatever. What does Marzutra say? Marzutra says something fascinating. He says, under normal circumstances, does Rami need to prove that he was there day and night? No. No. What does he say? Right? So look at the Rashbam. He makes it very clear. Miltab anti nafshahi. The pshita leila marzutra. To Marzutra said, look, it was obvious. To af al gav diba'u kol hanach amorai la'el shaloshan in ritzufot. Even though everyone needs 3 years consecutive, afilu hachin mechayven et amachtik lavi edim she'idu b'feirish akol ha'yomim v'alilot. You don't need Rami to prove that he was there day and night. El ya'idu stam. The witnesses just need to say, stam, meaning generically, shira'uhu dar shaloshanim. He was there for 3 years. Umistama imdar b'bayir af b'leilot. Darbo. And we assume that if he lived there during the day, he lived there at night. V'ka'omar marzutra di'ito'in me'ar'er. V'omar aite sahade. But if Andrew challenges it and says, I'm a night owl, I was only out at night, and I don't think you were there during the night. Ta'ana to ta'ana. So we listen. V'tzarech shi'avo edim shalelo v'yamim. And then you need to prove day and night. The Chevan, the Tan, Taina's Bori. Because since Andrew claims assertively and right, positively, the Ka'amar Ani Raitiv Shalodar Balelo Viveti, he said, I know he wasn't there at night. Ulekach lo machiti, and that's why I didn't protest. Ve'ein chesgato chazaka, therefore his chazaka doesn't count. Ulekach ani omer aite sade didar beit lachnin. And that's why I want you to bring proof that he was there for 3 years, bein b'yamama ben b'lelya, day and night. Hilkach tzarech lahavi edem achisho v'lomer lo shayu lo limchot. Okay. So, Marzutra says something very weird, which is that if Andrew challenges Rami and says, you weren't there at night, so then Rami needs to prove that he was there at night. But if Andrew doesn't challenge him, then he doesn't need to. Why not? Yes, but why? Nagavi, Gavi, I want to push you. The assumption was he was, and therefore what? Okay, but be very careful. What do you mean by assumption? I'm gonna push you here very, very precisely. What do you mean assumption? Wait, Ezra, I'm pushing Gavi. What do you mean assumption?
is by the fact that he was there during the day. There's no reason it's not the day that he was there.
Okay, good. So one possibility is, now, is, listen to me very carefully. Guys, this is a very sharp distinction, but very carefully. One possibility is that what's going on is this. And Ellie and Ezra are the witnesses. When they testify that they saw Romney living there during the day, they're testifying only about the day. But the court has the right, legally, to make an assumption that if someone lived there during the day, they also live there at night. Meaning, Ezra and Ellie are not testifying about the night. The court is making a reasonable assumption, but since it's only an assumption, if Andrew challenges it, so then we need to reassess it, because it was only based on an assumption. It's an assumption we're allowed to make because it's reasonable, but it's the court making that assumption. Right? What's the other possibility? Okay, I give it. Right. But you're jumping. I need you to move back one step. Right. Again, you're right. But let me try it one more time. What does it mean? We assume he was there at night. So one possibility is that the court makes that assumption. It's just an assumption that the court derives from the testimony, and therefore what? When he challenges the assumption, since it was only an assumption, so we can override it, because he knows for sure it's not true, and he's making a legal claim based on it, that he wasn't provoked, because etc. The other possibility is that it's actually implied not by the court, but in Ellie and Ezra's testimony. Right? Meaning it's as if they testified about the night also. And when Andrew challenges it, what you're saying is that the fact that you didn't testify explicitly means that he can challenge your testimony. Right? That's different. Right? Those are two different ways of conceptualizing this. Right? One is that no one ever testified that he was there at night. The court just assumed it. But if he says it's definitely not true, so we have to reevaluate it. The other is that it's assumed within your testimony. And the chiddush is that he can even challenge your testimony since you didn't say it explicitly.
Rizal Khamsin just points out examples where we see that this matters. So let me give you an example, okay? By marriage, we need not just knowledge, we need edus, right? So how is it that you ever have edus on bia? Right, the husband and wife were together. So what's the answer? Hein ede yichud, hein ede bia. The fact that you have witnesses on yichud is taken to be testimony on bia. Now that's not an assumption Bezdin makes, because you need edus. It's not enough to know. You need edus. In that case, it's clear conceptually what we're doing is we're saying testimony about yichud essentially acts as testimony about bia also. Right? That's one model. The other model where sometimes the court is allowed to make assumptions, so he gives one example, right? The classic case of edut meumad, right? Of circumstantial evidence is where the Gemara says that witnesses come in and they say,
We saw Reuven chasing Shimon with a knife, saying I'm going to kill you. And then we rounded the corner, and we saw that there was a knife in his chest, and he was bleeding and dying. So we don't accept that, right? That's circumstantial. But that's clearly a case where it's not that they're testifying they saw him killed. The Gemara is having a havamina that the court is allowed to make an assumption based on circumstantial evidence. The maskana is you can't. But the Gemara is clearly saying that sometimes you could plausibly imagine that the court would make assumptions based on circumstances, right? That's not the same as saying that the Edom testified about it. They didn't. It's that we believe the Edom and then draw our own conclusions. Right? Now, whichever you think is going on is what Andrew, the Chiddush is that Andrew can challenge that by saying explicitly, it didn't happen, right? One possibility is that he's actually able to challenge implicit Eidos. The other is that he can challenge assumptions, right? Right, those are just two different ways of looking at it, but you have to at least be careful conceptually that those are the two models that we're talking about. If you look at Tosfot here, Tosfot Omer Mar Zutra, Hikshe Ri Var Mordechai, the Rivam asked the parents of Kundras, Ki lo ta'en nami amaylo nishalohen, ki shema einon yodin al halelot, Shalom notzi alpi and shalom kedin to b'chol edur on endarshin yafe v'chanami alayno nachkor nami safek. The Rivam says, why don't you just ask them? So how does Tosfot clearly conceptualize it? Now how does this mechanism working? That it's included. Well, I don't know. I would have said that he's saying, that it's from the Eidot, because he's saying if it's the Eidot, it's implied in their Eidot, so, and then Andrew comes and challenges it, so we should just ask them, because if it's not something we assume, it's something that is implied by the Eidot, so when he challenges the implication, let's just clarify, right? So he says, or do it in advance to prevent Andrew from ever saying that. V'lav pirchahi. And he says it's not a question. Why? Since they testify the days, afil yomrim, ein anu yodim ala leilot, mistoma, kevin shedar b'yomim, dar nami b'leilot, im lo shetar to'en ame'arer shavadei lo dar. What is the answer? It seems to be that this is Tosu's question and answer. His question was, isn't it included in the Eidos? So let's ask him, what's his maskana? It's not included in the Eidos. That's exactly his maskana. Right? His havamina is that this was originally Eidos. And so then you should have to clarify. His maskana is, no, there's no havamina that Andrew and Ellie know that Rami was there at night. It's just that it's the maskana we, the court, derive from the Eidos. It's just an assumption. And because it's just an assumption, that's why we're allowed to challenge it. Right, you see how Tosfos seems to be dealing with exactly this question? Right, his question is, how can you challenge it? It's Eidos. Just ask them, and then you'll have Eidos on the books. And the answer is, they don't know. This isn't Eidos that Rami was there at night. This is Eidos that he was there during the day, from which we derive that he was probably there at night. And that's why Andrew can challenge it. Okay. Now, is anyone doing Daf Yomi? No, none of you doing Daf Yomi. Okay, so then irrelevant. But, I mean, not irrelevant, but I can't just say, as you saw in the Daf a few weeks ago. But, Reluchansi notes that there is, the place you would want to look if you wanted to really flesh this out is a machloket in Psochem, Daf Yod Aleph, about what happens when some witnesses testify that there was a crime at the end of the fifth hour, or the third hour, and the other witnesses say it's in the fifth hour, right? Is that considered contradictory or not? And the Gemara goes through a whole analysis, right, Rabbi Meir says it's batel, Rabbi Yehuda says it's not. And the Gemara there goes through the question of, well, maybe it's not possible because we assume that people make mistakes, right? And they don't know exactly what time it is. And Rava asks, right, well, how could you ever kill someone on this basis? Why don't we just, right, it's just a suffix. Right? It's just a suffix. Right? Rava says you can't just kill someone on the assumption that they're not making a mistake. Right? Right? Rava says, I don't understand. You're just going to assume that when he says the third hour and he says the fifth hour, they're legitimately off on time, but they're testifying on the same thing. You're going to put someone to death, me suffix? Right? So, Rukhamsi notes that at first glance, you might say that this seems like the Rivam. Right? Which is, you can't just make assumptions. Ask the witnesses and find out. But Rav Lichtenstein knows that that's not true in Maskana, because Rava seems to only say that by the death penalty, we don't make assumptions like this. But when you're not dealing with the death penalty, we might make assumptions like this. So it might be totally legitimate in our case to make an assumption about what happened during the night. Okay. Fine. So what you know, so in the middle of the show, what you get is this. You know, is this mix of Eidos issues with the issue of Chazaka. Now, let me ask you, okay? So let's go to the next line, rather, in the Gemara. Umodi Marzutra. Marzutra agrees Birochlan Amachirin Ba'ayarot with peddlers. Da'afagav Lotan Taninon Le. That even if he doesn't make the Taina, we make the Taina on his behalf because we don't expect him to have been home. So we act to defend him. Okay? Tanin le'anon. Umod Rav Huna bechanuta de mechozud in l'yama avida l'lel yelo avida. And Rav Huna agrees that you can create a chazaka in a store only during days because people only shop during the day. But now let me ask you a question. According to Rav Huna, everyone agrees that you can create a chazaka in a store even without being there at night. Good. But how long will it take you to create that chazaka? Gavi says 6 years. Anyone else want to argue? Okay, so who says 6 years? Tosfos. If you look at Tosfos, the Moder Avuna, Tosfos says that you need 6 years. Ainu Shelo Shishay Shanim. And the Ravid holds that also. Okay, who wants to give me another vote? There's only two possibilities, 6 years or 3 years, right? That's the position of the Rambam and Rabbi Yonah. They only need 3 years. Good. Can you explain to me the two sides of the suffix? Yeah. Meaning, according to Tosfot, this is part of the category of what? Houses, where fundamentally the Gemara thinks that the chazaka needed is full days, right? 3 years of full days. Whether that's because creates mochzakut or because that's what is needed for provocation, you actually need that. And stores are fundamentally like houses. And we've already established that a chazaka in a house is created by constant presence. And therefore, it may be that in a store where no one lives there at night, the night doesn't break it up, but it still doesn't create the chazaka, and therefore, you need 6 years. But remember, Ezra, you asked me before, but what about a field? You're not there all the time, and the answer is, of course not. Because by a house, we said that the way you create a chazaka is by constant presence, but by a field, it's not. It's by contiguous working for whatever is normal in the field, which is not all the time. So fields provide a model where constant is not really constant. It's whatever is normal. So this is the machlokes. Is Tosfos says, no, stores are fundamentally houses, and houses need constant presence. If people aren't there at night, so we'll forgive the consecutivity requirement and let you not be there at night, but you still haven't created a chazaka actively, so you need 6 years. As opposed to the Rambam, who will say, no, once you say that people are never there at night, it's like a field where contiguity doesn't require constancy. It requires consistency. And therefore, just like by a field, we don't require constancy, we require consistency as judged by the field, so we'll also require consistency as judged by stores. Right? But that's the fundamental machlokes between the Rambam and the Rabbeinu Yonah on the one hand, who say that you need only 3 years, and Tosfos and the Raavad are saying, no, yes, it's true, you don't need to be there at night. But because you don't need to be there at night, you need to create 3 years the other way, which is 6 years of days, which is 3 years, or, you know, arithmetically. Okay, so I think that covers the main issues here in terms of consecutivity and in terms of the Eidos Chiddush of, one more thing. Let's go back to Marzutra for a second. Marzutra, we assumed, was saying something about Eidos. But it's possible that he wasn't. It's possible that Marzutra wasn't saying something about Eidos. He was saying something about Chazaka. Namely, that if Andrew doesn't challenge Rami about nights, then we can assume that enough provocation was created to prove that it was Rami's, not Andrew's, because he should have said something. But if Andrew actually articulates that the reason he didn't protest was because Rami wasn't there at night, so it undermines our conviction in the chazaka itself. It's not about Eidos. It's not just that we're not sure what happened. It's that it undermines what the chazaka is, right? Meaning, was there the necessary provocation? And if Andrew says, no, there wasn't the necessary provocation because I know he wasn't there at night, it's not a question of what we know. It's a question of whether we can call it a chazaka. Okay. So that, I think, mostly polishes off what I wanted to say about the question of Ritzifut, right, of contiguity, and the Eidos issues here, and the 3 years and 6 years. I don't want to kill you and make you go too much into it. I did say that I would quickly talk about Beit Knesset, which I didn't make you actually read inside, but let me just throw it out there. What? Beit Knesset, a shul. So in this sugya, all the Rishonim ask about creating a chazaka in seats and shuls. Now, I'll be honest, here in the footnote in Reb Lichtenstein's book, I don't know who actually wrote the footnote, I think it was Gerti. He just said, well, I don't understand the whole sugya, you don't own your seat in shul. But it turns out that if you really read through the Rishonim, you see that they seem to have actually bought seats in shul. Like, it seems to have actually, for many years, have been conceptualized, you actually paid and bought your spot. It wasn't just like the shul owned it and then gave it out to people for a year. It was actually owned by individuals, and therefore this entire sugya in the Rishonim seems to only have applied when people actually bought the actual seat in shul. I could prove this to you at length, but if you want, I will send you the Olamot shir on it, where they just go through the history of it. I'm not going to torture you like that. But all the Rishonim ask, can you, once you're talking about contiguity, what would that look like in shul? Because no one expects you to be there all the time. So here you get interesting positions. Because basically, there were people who said, I have a chazaka, you must have sold your makom. And what was the response? No, I didn't, because you were never in shul consecutively. And based on our sugya, you know that you need ritzifut. So, aha, you never created a chazaka. So the Ritva says that you need to sit there at every tefillah, right? You need contiguity of normal use, like the Rambam said, by stores. The Ister had even more Makil Shita, as the Ritva quoted him, which was, it's not that you have to be there at every tefillah. It's that it's a negative chazaka. You can't ever daven there and daven in a different makom. Meaning, it's true, not everyone davens in shul all the time. You have things to do. You don't make every minyan. But in shul, it's a negative chazaka. If you ever daven in somebody in a different makom, that would destroy your chazaka. To be fair, this is a very weird sugya. But you see that they're playing off these notions of, right, what exactly does it mean to create a chazaka in something where there's no expectation of contiguity? Following the model of the Rambam, you might say, that's totally fine. Just make sure you're there all the time, that you actually daven there. Right? The answer is a bigger chiddush, which is saying, no, you don't even have to be there every tefillah. You just can't not be there. Right? You can't break a chazaka. It seems to me that like your hold on your seat in shul was like presumed unless you broke it. Why it should be that way, I don't quite know. But just to know that this discussion exists in Rishonim, but it's really pretty strange and complicated. But if you look at the Rishonim, you'll see that they really, really try to flesh this out. And some say that it's even more than that. That even if you sat in a different makom, that wouldn't take away a chazaka. The only thing that would take away chazaka is if you let someone else sit there. Right? Meaning it's not enough for it to have a negative chazaka. It needs to be that you destroy the chazaka, and only then would it lose the chazaka. So you have all these fascinating discussions in Rishonim, but I'm going to leave it there. What?